Did you know that it is Asian American Pacific Islanders Heritage Month? Macy's is highlighting some really cool AAPI-owned brands right now, like Carden, Kaja, Amelia George, and Hey Meave. Plus, you can help support college access and student success when you donate online or round up in-store to APIA Scholars. APIA is the nation's leading nonprofit organization devoted to the academic, personal, and professional success of Asian American, Native, Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander students. Shop Asian American and Pacific Islander-owned brands at Macy's.com or in-store.
The best part of spring cleaning is the post-clean clarity you get. It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless, and then Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. It's time to switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data, unlimited talk and text, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone and any Mint Mobile plan and bring your own phone number along with your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. My team here, they're on Mint Mobile and they like it.
For a fraction of the cost, Mint Mobile proved to have excellent coverage with no drop calls or unsent texts. Plus, they make it super easy for me to activate my device just by following a few simple steps online. And bam, done.
To get this new customer offer and the new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/literally. That's mintmobile.com/literally. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/literally. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Man, I haven't seen you since we had, I think, lunch at Cipriani or something. I mean, you are just a young, wide-eyed doe at the gates of the Dream Factory.
It's true.
Welcome to the podcast, everybody. This is Literally with me, Rob Lowe. Today's a really special podcast for me. We have Michael Gandolfini, son of the great James Gandolfini, who, in my opinion, delivered the greatest performance in the history of television as Tony Soprano. Obviously, passed away way too early, and Michael is carrying on his dad's legacy as an actor. And I know him as a friend. He's friends with my kids, and to watch him grow into who he's become is super, super fun. And to get a chance to talk to him, I think you're really going to like it. We got into some really, really cool stuff. Out of all the people I've had on the show, and we've had great people, as you know, if you've been a listener, I think there's more good stuff about acting and getting into the business and why you get into the business and the tools of the business in this interview than in any interview we've ever done on Literally. So stand by, and let's get to, as I like to call him, Little Gandolfini.
I'm in LA right now. I was out with my mom because she lives out here for the holidays. And here I'm about to finish my last semester of NYU.
I love that you didn't drop out.
Well,
I love it.
My family's Italian, so I was, you know, I was graduating. Like, that was something that I was
You're the first in your family to ever do anything. That was my first attempt at your pops.
It wasn't horrible. I sort of always wanted it and then figured out that, you can actually take really interesting classes in college and actually learn about really cool stuff. I've got two classes left.
I sometimes think that the age that people go to college is too early for some people to appreciate it. Like, I know when I was supposed to be going, I didn't because I was doing movies, but like, I would want to go now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like in way more interested in things at this stage in my life, but I don't want to be the old man in the corner.
Well, it's tough to like, ask people, like, all right, you have 4 years to make up what you want to do in your life. Like, a lot of my friends graduate and go, like, I don't know what I want to do. I mean, I'm so lucky that I know what I wanted to go into and got to study anthropology and psychology and actually things that go to my job. But so many people don't know what they want to do at 19, 18.
Yep.
So, I was super lucky and I've been lucky to get to work in Atlanta and Cleveland and still get to go to school and fly back and forth. And now with Zoom, Zoom's so hard on so many people, but it's so great for me. I get to go to school and work.
That's a really good point I hadn't thought about, because you could literally do it on location. Mm-hmm. There's so much to go over. For those of you out there, so Michael's great friends with my youngest son, John Owen. And, I was friendly with your dad. We were during The Sopranos' reign, The West Wing were... I really think that it was the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. I really
do.
Yeah. And I think we were the Beatles because, listen, let's face it, the Sopranos are way more fucking macho and tough. So they were for sure the Stones.
The Beatles, it's not bad to be a Beatle, though.
No, it sure isn't. I mean, I think Aaron Sorkin would take being a Beatle, and I think David Chase would take being a Stone. For sure. I think 100% they would.
Sure.
And by the way, I think they would choose that if they had the choice.
For sure. I mean, I can't think of really no Beatles in David Chase's sort of music book.
No.
No Beatles and no Led Zeppelin. That's what he said to me. Because I was making a Tony soundtrack.
Really?
Yeah. And I had some Zeppelin and he was like, Tony does not listen to Led Zeppelin.
I find a Jersey guy in that era super would. Did he give you a reason why not?
No, I mean, he's sort of, there's a lot of more sort of, you have a lot of, you got a lot of Stones, the Strokes, sort of a lot of these, interestingly enough, British sort of rockers that came over. He loves Dylan, and then Jim Morrison is huge for David. So things like that. I never asked why.
It's so funny because all my musical friends find Jim Morrison super divisive. I had David Crosby on the show, and David openly loathes Jim Morrison. And it's super funny to get to wind David Crosby up about Jim Morrison. Yeah. It's really funny.
I want to go,
hey, Cros, Jim's dead. He's been dead a long time.
You don't have to be so angry at him.
So now that The Saints is out, it lives in the world, you've gone through all of it. What I think is amazing is that you had never seen The Sopranos, which makes sense because of your age. You were born the year it came out, right?
Correct, yeah. I'm the exact same age as the show.
So you get the opportunity to do it. How was it? I know because John Owen told me, and I think my son watched some episodes with you.
He did.
And by the way, I think it would have been the first time he had seen it, because I was trying to get the kids to watch that. They were too young to watch it, and I was obsessed with it, as everybody was. What was your experience watching it for you and then watching it with your friends and then seeing your dad in that towering? When you look up the word towering performance, people say, it's a towering performance. That is what it is.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, the first thing was, and I feel like Johnny can relate too. And I think a lot of kids with it's just a normal son dad thing. I think any sons can relate. I wanted to reject it so much. I was like, oh, it's going to be so annoying and boring. And I don't know if I'll even like it. Just this natural sort of rebellion.
It's the way my kids feel about absolutely everything I do.
Yeah. Which movie did I watch with Johnny of yours? Coppola directed it.
The Outsiders.
Thank you. Yeah. The Outsiders with Johnny. And I remember I was like, oh my God, it's one of the best movies ever. And he's like, yeah, it's good. It's a good movie. And I completely related to being yeah, Sopranos is really, it's really great. It might be one of the best TV shows ever. But
you're parroting just by rote the things you know you're supposed to say about
exactly.
It was and groundbreaking.
Like,
yes,
in,
was
inside of you, you're like, everyone's right. Everyone's so good in it. But like that was sort of the feeling going in. And then, you know, I started watching and it was just so incredible. I mean, just kind of defied all my expectations of it. Because like, whenever I say this, it blows my mind. But like, I was so not involved in any of it. Like, my dad and my family and my mom really raised me as normally as they could, you know? A lot of time spent in New Jersey mowing lawns and crabbing off the dock and having my own friends. And my dad had a core group of college friends that he met in college. And those were the people around me. So like, I really didn't know what the show was about. I really hadn't seen anything my dad was in. So it really was an amazing experience.
And he didn't bring it home with him. He wasn't like Daniel Day-Lewis where he came home and had to be a mobster while he was, you know, doing your homework.
No, not at all. You know, I mean, there was definitely, Sopranos was tough when you'd film. I wouldn't see him a lot. You know, it was a lot of time away from him. But definitely no bringing it home. And even when I'd go to set, but everyone is like, oh my God, what was set like? Like, it was mostly in the trailer. Like, in the trailer, drawing, doing homework. I never saw anything interesting with Tony Soprano. Like, there was no, like, you know what I mean? It'd be like him walking down the street to get some paper, buttoning his shirt. Like, there's, like, little, like, inputs like that. Like, I never saw, like, an intense scene.
You never saw any of the classic Soprano scenes. You didn't see him, you know, stomping Joey Pants to death.
Exactly. No, not at all. Like, the best Sopranos day was the day with the bear. There's a bear in the backyard. And he was like, he called my mom. And he's like, Marcy, pull Michael out of school right now. Come to set. And my mom was like, why would I pull him out of school? And he's like, there's this bear here. You gotta pull him out. So like, she pulled me out of school and we went to set. And, you know, there's just black bear on a leash just walking around and you just give it treats. And one of my favorite pictures of all time is my dad holding me. I mean, I have to be 4, 5 maybe. And next to him, he's just like holding hands with this bear, this big black bear. It's just us three. Like, that is by far the most exciting thing I remember from set.
It's so indicative of who your dad was in terms of not being Tony Soprano, although Tony was obsessed with the Ducks.
That is true.
In the pilot, which is, and the reason I think that worked is because your dad has such an innate sweetness to him.
Yeah.
And that he would see a bear on a set and be so excited that he would want to pull you out of school to see a bear.
Totally.
Is like, that's totally my sort of sense of who he was, that sort of unbelievably big bear himself.
Yeah. You know, and it was interesting, like, I've never done any press, so this press run talking about these things, like, you know, I did learn some things about myself, which is like, people would ask, why'd you want to be an actor? When'd you know? And like, even though I never saw like this, anything really like great scenes or like stuff like that, like, I always wanted to be on set. Like, I always had something that was like, bring me to set, please. Mm-hmm. Like, when can I come to set? When can I come to set? And especially when I got older, like, I remember my dad did a movie called Burt Wonderstone with Jim Carrey and Steve Carell and Steve Buscemi. And I was going to school and every night was an argument. Like, you got to go home and go to bed. You got to wake up tomorrow. And I'd be like, please, please let me just stay and hear your guys' conversations. Like, please let me just watch. And I just wanted to stand in the corner and just watch.
Was it the process? Was it the energy? Was it, what about, I mean, there are a lot of things about a set that are magnetic for people, but could you figure out what exactly it was for you?
This motivating question of like, how do you do that? I would watch a performance or something and just be so amazed and baffled and just go, like, how did that person do that? So there was something about set. I think at first it was the energy, the people, the camaraderie, and then just watching, how do you do that? And I remember thinking, oh, that's so weird. Like, an actor would be like, ah, I don't think I should wear this type of shoe. Or like, let me come in a beat later. And I remember when I was young, I was like, why would that matter? What does that change? And I would then see it. I would be like, whoa, that changed the whole scene.
That's a great point. That's such a great point. It's like, well, why would I go to the refrigerator?
Yeah.
Right now, into, you know, the uninitiated, it might be an interesting idea, but there's no sense of how that kind of little thing can affect everything.
Totally. And I think that had just really just took me and kind of sucked me into it. And I always wanted to be there. And also the camaraderie. Like, my dad did a play on Broadway. And
oh,
then,
yeah. Famous. What is it again?
God
of Carnage. Oh, my God. It's a great play.
Yeah.
I saw a later iteration without him, but that play is gnarly.
It's so great. And, like, he wouldn't let me see it, so I didn't know what it was about. It was a big thing, too. I was like, you're never going to be on Broadway again. You have to let me see it. And he was like, no, no, no. But I would sit on the railing, like, where in the wings, and I would high-five Jeff and Hope and all of them. I would high-five them as they were going out. I would go in my room, and they would close the door, and they would turn off the sound so I couldn't hear anything. I would do my homework, and then they'd be like, all right, Michael, they're off in two, and I would sprint to the wings, and I would high-five them coming off, and, like, loved it.
Well, that's amazing. An actor coming off of crushing a show like that. Mm-hmm. So it was Jeff Daniels,
Hope Davis, my dad, and then Marcia Gay Harden.
Oh my God, I forgot Marcia Gay was in it.
Yeah, and Marcia and my dad were a couple, and Jeff and Hope were the other couple.
That's right.
And then he let me see it in LA because I was a little older, and then I just loved it.
And that's the other thing about your pops was, you know, and I have respect for all actors that I have respect for. Mm-hmm. But of those, the ones that also do theater and who are proficient in it, that's a whole other level. I mean, there are plenty of amazing actors who have never set foot on the stage, and they're great actors, but if there was an MVP vote, you would have to have put in your time in the theater.
Yeah, completely. That was sort of the like, I mean, look, like, life on life's terms, but the goal was to do a play after Saints, sort of like do Saints, have it come out, and then find a great play. But with COVID, you know, it got tough.
What did you have a play in mind?
Not really. You know, like, I mean, the play world is so complicated. It was sort of like I was going to learn how a professional play works, like which ones could we do, what would be right for New York, what would be a small black box theater we could do a run in. So all those things. But it's also tough. I'm in a weird age range.
It's so funny you say that. That's what people don't realize is I remember being, you know, when I was in my 20s, it was particularly my mid to late 20s was super. It's a super hard time. You're too old to play the kid.
Mm-hmm.
You're way too young to play the man.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of in this weird, I just always knew that I was going to have more interesting stuff, you know, when I got closer to my 40s, and lo and behold, that's what happened. And that's the same thing will happen to you. It is like, you'll be in that age range and just be crushing it.
Yeah. I sort of totally agree. A big question is like, what's next for you? And it's kind of like, well, not only as a performer, but also as a young man, like, I don't know. I don't know what I fit into, you know? Like, I tend to relate to older characters more. I feel like, you know, I just...
Because they're better.
Yeah.
What's the one that everybody did in New York in the 80s and 90s? It was... True West. Everybody was doing True West. The Quaid brothers and True West. And, like, literally anybody and everybody was doing True West.
Yeah. I mean, Sam Shepard is it's funny you say it, is like definitely one of my like heroes. I mean, Barry Child was what I auditioned to NYU with. I did Barry. Wow. You had to do two monologues. So I did Barry Child and I did This Is Our Youth, which is, you know, another. But yeah, I mean, True West, Barry Child, and then, I mean, there's a ton of Sam Shepard plays that are incredible.
Where else can you go surfing and skiing in the same day? Or check out a world-class art museum and camp out under a brilliant night sky same day? Or hike through the redwoods and get a luxury spa treatment? There's only one answer: California. No matter where you go across this state, you will find a way to play. I love California. And I have not yet surfed and skied in the same day, although I do both. So that is on my bucket list. It's the most beautiful place in the world. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today. Hey, listeners. Ever have trouble getting someone on the phone when you have a question about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If someone were afraid of the dentist, maybe they haven't been in a long time, maybe they're embarrassed because they haven't been in a while, I feel like this would be a really safe place for them to go and get the care that they need.
At Advanced Dentistry, we get it. If you've been avoiding the dentist because of fear, worry, or just not wanting to be judged, if you want to learn how IV sedation can change your life, visit nofeardentist.com.
So in that amazing sort of run-up and initial release of The Saints, were people calling you, reaching out to you? Like, walk me through that, because I bet that must have been super fun. Because there was so much attention around it and around you and, you know, you playing your dad. There's so many different storylines around that movie.
Yeah.
That everybody was obsessed with it. What was that like?
It was so amazing and so crazy because, again, like, I hear me say it and I go, that can't be true. But it was like, I wasn't really in, I didn't know what it was like to be like, to have fame or to have like that attention. Like, even I knew my dad was recognized and stuff like that, but like, it was really a first for me. So
yeah,
I did this movie and it was so secretive, because David is so secretive. And this is sort of like the experience of like the pulp, you know, pop culture of it all and kind of the external, like, and I had the best time, met the best people, kept pinching myself every day on set, like, oh my God, this is my dream. Like, I cannot believe this. And then it ended and I sort of was like, oh, all right, well, it was like summer camp. Like, that was a fun little thing we did. Like, it was like making a movie with my friends like I'd done in high school, and sort of moved on. And then, like, I would have these like crazy moments, like, hey, you know, publicity is so crazy in so many ways, because like, you go to acting school and like, there's this sort of toxic, but like, it's the reality is that like, oh, you're not an actor unless you're on talk shows and in magazines and doing movies that are big.
That's how it was. They say you never want to see how the sausage is made. That's how the sausage is made of being a pro in the entertainment industry.
Totally. So like, that was something new. So like, you know, being on a shoot on a, you know, Vanity Fair magazine, just like, oh right. My God, this is crazy.
Did Johnny tell me a great story about you and GQ?
So,
do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. I was so honored. I got to be, this is a perfect example. I got to be in the issue of GQ Man of the Year, which is so crazy and just so honored.
Yes, Michael, I believe I won it in 2003. I'm so sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
Look at that. Look at that.
It's 2001, but who's counting? But this is your moment, not mine. Continue.
So I was a little piece of it, and I was so lucky to be in the issue. And one of the things is they invite you to the party. There's this great party. And again, like, you know, my life, I live in New York. I'm so lucky and privileged for so much stuff, but I'm still like pretty normal. I go to school and what, you know, normal, quote unquote, whatever that means. So I get invited and they fly me in. Warner Brothers goes, we'll fly him out. So I don't have to pay for my flight. I'm like, wow, this is so cool. And I just did a movie called Cat Person. I have a very small part in it, but I brought my friend Amelia Jones, who's this amazing actress. And okay, so here we are. We're in the SUV. You know, I also the other thing is clothing. Like my dad wore khaki pants and a button-down shirt to everything, and I sort of wear hoodies and like jeans, and I like look greasy all the time. So like it's been like this like very amazing experience to like, oh, what are you wearing? Or who are you wearing? And I'm like, I have no idea. Like, it's been a very new thing. So like the anxiety over getting clothes is always very, very big for me. So like, you know, I get the suit, it's pressed, it's everything, I put it on. And the first thing that actually happened was like, there was someone who was coming to do my hair and just like, I don't know, glue it down for me. And they went to the wrong address, so they couldn't come. So I was like, that's fine, I'll go, and I've done my hair my whole life. Like, it's okay.
Right, yeah. Right.
So I do it. So we're going to be a little late. Going to be about 30, 45 minutes late. So I get in the car, which, by the way, as you know, that's early.
Yes.
So I go to Amelia's hotel to pick her up, and I get out of the car, and there's this guy there. And this guy is blackout drunk, and he's in his 40s, 50s with his wife, I assume, and he's German. And he's like, oh, are you lit? Are you lit right now? Are you lit? And I'm like, I'm sober, as you know. So I'm like, no, I'm not. He's like, what are you doing tonight? And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, I'm going to this party. He's like, where is it? Where's the party? I'm like, oh my God, just trying to like get this guy away from me. So I like go, I look at my driver, I'm like, I don't know, you tell him. And he's like, oh, it's at the whatever hotel. And he's
the
like,
GQ oh. Man of the Year Awards, bro.
Exactly. So I didn't sit, and he's like, well, maybe I'll come. And I'm like, yeah, man, you should show up. You know, okay. So this guy walks away. I'm like, okay. We pick up Amelia, we go to the party. So we're pulling up, and I'm talking to her, and there's all these people outside, and, you know, incredible actors and actresses that I look up to, and oh my God. So we get out, I get in line, you know, tell I'm Mike Gandolfini, they give me a ticket or whatever. So I turn around, and there's the German guy. The German guy came to the hotel. He's like, how do I get in? I was like, oh, shit.
You're inviting literally drunken strangers off the street to the GQ Man of the Year Awards.
I know. I'm like, oh, shit. And Amelia's like, who is that? I'm like, it's this guy that I met outside. I don't know. And I was like, I don't know, man. Just stand in line. So I was like, we got to go. We got to get away from this guy.
You're like, so, you see Brad Pitt over there? Just stand behind Brad Pitt and you'll get in.
Exactly. So I go to walk in. There's two people standing there and they say, welcome. And you walk into the venue. Whatever. That's what you do when you go to a party. So I have a great night. We have so much fun. It was so amazing. I got to see some friends I haven't seen in a long time. I got to meet Andrew Garfield, which is one of my heroes. I got to see Tom Holland was on the cover, and I love him so much. We did a movie together, and I'm so close to him and his brother and his team, and such a fun night. And I go home at night and I go to bed. And my mother wakes me up and goes, because I was staying at her house, and she goes, "Why didn't you walk the red carpet?" And I go, "There wasn't one." And she goes, "I was looking all night for all the red carpet updates and you weren't on it." And I'm like, "Mom, you weren't there. There wasn't a red carpet." And I turn my phone over and I have like 40 texts and calls. And I'm like, "Oh my God, what is this about?" So when you get invited to the party, you have to go on their behalf. And you go and walk the carpet as a sign of respect and to promote it and help out. I didn't see the carpet, so I didn't walk it. So everyone's like, "Where were you? Did you even go to this party?" Warner Brothers is like, "We flew you out there. Did you go?" And I'm like, "I swear to God, I saw Johnny the next day, like just freaking out." I was like, "Everyone thinks I skipped this party." And like, I don't know where this carpet was. I guess it was to like my, I don't know, but I wasn't going to walk in and be like, "Excuse me, where's the red carpet?" Like, I just didn't know. So
they pay you, they fly you out, they get the plane, they give you, they put you in the magazine.
They put me in a suit. The list,
they put you in the suit. You go all the way there and you don't end up on the red carpet, which is, it's like if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to see it, did it really fall? Fell in the forest and there was no one to see you on the red carpet.
And there was no one to see me. And everyone's like, "Did he, you know, what did he do then?" And they did it. And I'm like, I'm telling you, I went. And lo and behold, there's this amazing picture of Tom Holland and Andrew Garfield. And guess who's in the background? Me. So I take the picture. Everyone's like, "Look at the two Spider-Man." And I take the picture and I send it to everyone. I'm like, "There I am at the GQ party in the background." And it's this little picture of me holding a glass, like far in the background. And I was like, "I did go. Here I am." Yeah, it was stressful.
See, publicity 101, never, ever miss the red carpet.
I know. Noted.
That's my favorite story. John Owen called me and was like, "Michael G, you missed the red carpet. He's tripping."
I was sweating. I was freaking out. Yeah.
Well, it's amazing the things they don't teach you in acting school.
Oh, man. Yeah. A lot of my friends that go to acting school and stuff, they, you know, ask me like, you fundamentally don't learn anything other than connecting and doing it every day. Like, I say the best part of acting school is like, you get to not be so afraid of it.
Right.
Because that's the most important part.
It's time in the saddle. And if you're lucky, you get a mentor who will give you some good tools to put in your toolbox.
Yeah.
And if you're super lucky, you don't get someone who fucks up all of your natural instincts.
Exactly. Exactly. It's more dangerous in some ways. And that's, you know, I went to NYU Tisch for one semester and I left. I dropped out because, you know, I don't think it's anyone's fault, but all I was learning for me, who is a highly sensitive and anxious person, was anxiety, competition, insecurity, comparing myself to others. That's all I was learning.
We come by that naturally.
Exactly. I was like, "I have enough of this. Like, this room is, this acting school was really, you know, I think it helped a lot of people, but it got me more stuck." And then I was arguing with teachers and storming out of the class. And like, I was like, "This isn't working." So,
yeah, I mean, people ask me all the time about acting school, and my kid wants to be an actor. John Owen's an actor. You're an actor. I mean, I mentor young actors. And I've been through it. I was a child actor, and I just have such profound mixed feelings about it. And like, yeah. I said, if you have a great thing going, more power to you, and it's great. And, you know, I mean, I know amazing people went to Juilliard and came out with, I mean, it's all, listen, if you can get into Juilliard, you should fucking go to Juilliard. Let's just get real. But, you know, some of my favorite actors were people who didn't know one fucking thing about it and ended up on a set. You know, Wilford Brimley, you know, was a fucking cowboy. And I mean, totally. Harrison Ford was a carpenter.
Yeah. I always say, like, honestly, the thing that makes any good actor is being able to relax. If you can relax enough, you can be a great actor. But that's so hard. Like, to be actually open and relaxed, it's one of the hardest things to do.
I have a theory why. I don't want to name a name. If we were offline, I would name it. But it's one of my Titanic, like, master of the universe actors in his late 20s and 30s in the 70s, right? He had iconic movies. And now is famous for being so over the top, like beyond over the top. Like, people imitate his over the top performances.
I think I know who you're talking about.
And I go, what? And he's not alone. It's a thing that can happen to, I find, older actors as they get super broad and big. And I think it's because they've mastered being relaxed for so long and are so in the pocket that it feels like they're not doing anything to them. Yeah. And then they start going, am I just phoning this in? Because that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
And then they start pushing to make it feel, to make themselves feel, you know what I'm saying? And then they end up screaming and yelling and throwing stuff. Whereas 20 years ago, they just would have said the dialogue and killed it.
Totally. I totally agree. And something that's happening now that I'm very interested in, it's sort of what I study at NYU, is sort of this idea of character. What is a character, and how do audiences take a character, and for actors? And I don't know, not a lot of people go and see a movie to see the characters. They go and see the actors. And I think that's just this culture and Instagram and fame. Like, there's an element of, wow, The Tragedy of Macbeth just came out. I want to go see Denzel Washington play that part. I don't really want to go to see Macbeth.
Yes.
Did people go see Saints to see the young Tony Soprano, or did they come to see Michael Gandolfini and all of the sort of pop culture around it play that character? And it's just an interesting thing that's sort of happening with actors now. Not that that happens all the time, but it's a big part.
But hearing it, I think it has been happening all the time. I mean, I'm a big Robert Redford guy. Mm-hmm. And, Out of Africa is one of my favorite movies. And, he's playing his character, I believe, is from Denmark or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thomas Haddon Fitch, I think.
Yeah. Something like that.
And so he's from Denmark. He's Thomas Haddon Fitch from Denmark. It's from a book. It's a famous, famous book. The character exists. He's playing it.
Yeah.
He doesn't do any accent.
Sure.
He did, by the way, he did 1 week, apparently. And Sidney Pollack was like, hey, Bob, you know what, man? I love you. You're Bob Redford.
Yeah.
You don't need to do the accent.
It's true.
And by the way, did he? No, he didn't. Now,
yeah,
that same part played by Daniel Day-Lewis, there's going to be an accent. There will be an accent.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would be equally as good. But so, to get caught up in that stuff, it's super interesting, and you're smart to have latched onto it.
Yeah.
But they're just different. It's different strokes for different folks.
Totally. There are absolutely right. There's the Heath Ledgers and Daniel Day-Lewis's, and then there's the Harrison Fords. I go to a movie to see Harrison Ford, and I love every bit of it. He's
Jimmy Stewart, Cary Grant, Paul Newman,
Lauren Bacall, all those people. Yeah.
I kind of think I'm more, unless it's a very, very, very like one in a billion chameleon type actors.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more down for seeing a known quantity personality that I know play a part for me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's what's so fun about it is it like depends on the thing, right? Like, one of my favorite performances is Ryan Gosling in Crazy Stupid Love. Like, he's playing into being Ryan Gosling and it's amazing and so fun. But Tom Hardy in The Revenant is incredible too.
I know. I know. You're absolutely right. I mean, you're absolutely right. People ask, you know, what is the greatest performance ever? And I said, I don't know what the greatest performance ever is, but I will tell you the bravest performance ever. And I'm sorry, I don't give up. You cannot convince me that anyone else comes close. So you're Johnny Depp. They offer you Pirates of the Caribbean.
Mm.
You have to remember, that's become such a thing that you have to go back in time and remember it was an amusement park ride.
Totally.
It was a movie based on not based on a book, not based on a play, not based on someone has this great idea for a script. Nope. Based on a ride.
Yeah.
Talk about gross. And you give it to Johnny Depp, who holds his nose and says yes.
Yeah.
Because he's been doing weird movies that work, don't work, whatever. And it's kind of, you know, put up or shut up time for him.
Yeah.
And we all face that in our careers. And you know, the studio's like, we've got Johnny Depp in this. Fuck yeah, this is going to be amazing. And you know what they were hoping to get was Jake Gyllenhaal in Prince of Persia.
Totally.
But what they got was Jack Sparrow. And can you imagine making that choice? We all think that it was just baked in, that just naturally happened. Hell no.
No way.
There's a version of the movie, and it's the version the studio wanted, of a handsome, straight, leading man, macho, boring.
Yeah.
Doing his thing. And Johnny's like, you know what? I won't be doing that. It's the bravest acting choice in the history of the business, period.
I agree.
And then, you know, they're like, want to fire him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a moment where the guy comes to you and, you know, you go, do I want to get fired off of this, the last train leaving Clarkston for me?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'll just dial it back. And he didn't.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. Those sort of aha moments where someone pulls something out of their hat, you know, and comes up. But I love Pirates of the Caribbean, by the way. Like, I've always been like, I want to play a pirate.
You'd be a good pirate. So I came home to a little gift in my bathroom the other day from our friends at Harry's. To get what you want, you have to challenge the status quo and blaze your own trail. You know who challenged the status quo? Harry's. They saw customers getting ripped off by questionable products in the shaving industry and decided they had something better to offer. So instead of charging the same old ridiculous prices, Harry's found a way to make their beautifully designed razors, and they are beautiful, for a fraction of the price of the other big brands. Exceptional products, honest prices. That's Harry's. They have the highest customer satisfaction in shaving history and a no-risk trial. Don't like your shave? No worries. It's on them. Convenient subscription options that you can cancel at any time. And Harry's also has other self-care products that meet the same quality standards as their razors. Richly lathering, skin-softening body wash in scents like redwood, wildland, and stone. And an extra high-quality, amazing-smelling deodorant for just $5. I love their stuff. I'm so impressed by Harry's products. All of it. It's all good. Don't settle for the status quo. Blaze your own trail with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/rob. That's harrys.com/rob for a $3 trial set.
Shopping for humans is hard. Shopping for your dog is easy. Thanks to Bark. Every month, we deliver toys and treats just for your pup. They deserve to be spoiled every month. At Bark, we send your dog a whole collection of toys and treats made just for them every single month. Whether it's our fun plush toys or our ultra tough toys from Super Chewer, we give your dog exactly what they want. And for a limited time, we will double your first box for free. To get your free upgrade, go to BarkBox.com/Rob. BarkBox is so convenient and delivers straight to your door and, more importantly, right to your dog. I can't wait to try out BarkBox. My dogs need their toys, particularly the chewable toys. Sign up now at BarkBox.com/Rob for an exclusive offer. This ad is now over. Let's get back to petting our dogs.
Ready for an amazing deal? Breezeline's fiber-powered internet starting at $19.99 per month offers the reliability you deserve and security you can trust. Whether you're streaming, gaming, or working from home, we've got all your needs covered with speeds up to 1 gig and our 2-year price lock guarantee. This deal gets even better with 2 free months of internet, free equipment, and free Wi-Fi your way to protect against cyber threats. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires July 8th, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
And by the way, just circling back to Tony Soprano, the pilot of The Sopranos, as good as it is, and it's super, super good, he's not really the Tony that he became. He's sort of, you can sort of noodling around it.
You know, the first four seasons were like the ones I really sunk my teeth into to create this character. That's when you still have like this real genre confused but specific show where it's cartoony and dark and funny and sad and all that stuff. And then after season four, it gets darker.
Again, because it was the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, I was always like, hey, the West Wing showed up fully formed. Like, our pilot is as good as anything we ever did afterwards.
Yeah.
First six episodes, The Sopranos is fine.
Totally.
Until he goes on Meadows' college trip.
I completely agree. I always tell people it takes about four or five or six episodes for it to really find its stride. And I think that's because of, yeah, tonally stuff and also my dad finding it. You know, you're completely right. The pilot is totally different. There's actually narration in the pilot because of Goodfellas. David was inspired by Goodfellas. So it opens with my dad kind of like, you know, the therapy thing, but then he's like laying in bed and he's walking down. And when he's walking down, he has a narration, which they never do again. No narration.
Edie Falco is beyond belief. And
she is incredible.
She's insanely good.
Yeah.
Everybody in that show.
Yeah. It's really amazing.
I'll sound like a total hack reporter now. So tell me what's next for you, young Gandolfini.
Do you have some
secret project you can't talk about?
I do have one secret project.
See, I know what's going on.
One secret project that I'm very excited about that I start in February in Atlanta.
So this secret project is happening.
Yeah, I'm going to be in it. I'm a small, you know, here's the thing, like, I got so lucky, like, after Saints came out, I really got to go and do a lot of really, my goal is to do smaller parts. I want to go and play a bunch of different parts in supporting roles. Like, that's what I want to go do. And I got to be I got to do a little bit on Ari Aster's next movie with Joaquin Phoenix, which was incredible.
Okay. Tell me about, I'm a huge Joaquin fan. Who is not? He's one of my favorite actors ever. What was that like? Give me a little Joaquin insight.
Oh man, he is just, he's incredible. We met, at base camp where like your trailers are and talked a little bit and it was so good. Well, here's another fun thing about Joaquin. My dad did a movie called 8mm.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Which is like this pretty intense, I think it was Joel Schumacher.
It was Joel Schumacher, yep.
Yeah, and you know, about the sort of grunge porno sort
snuff
of like
film
snuff
stuff,
film.
Yeah.
In it, the like main group of people were Joaquin Phoenix, my dad, Nicolas Cage, and Chris Bauer. He plays this like the machinist, this guy. He wears a mask the whole time. I have worked now with Chris Bauer on The Deuce. He's a dear friend. Joaquin Phoenix, this Ari Aster movie. And then my dad's like, I just have to get in a movie with Nick Cage, and I've completed the 8mm.
You brought it full circle.
So, you know, me and Joaquin were talking about that because there was actually a day, I believe, that my dad accidentally punched Nick Cage in the face and they had to like call stop and like it was this whole thing.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
I know. So we were talking about that. So nice. And then we left to get ready, and the scene's a very intense scene. Anyone who's seen Ari Aster movies knows that there's always
Yeah, what was the, just for the people who might not know, what would your favorite Ari Aster, your two favorite ones?
So Ari Aster, his first movie, it was Hereditary.
Which is insane. Hereditary is beyond belief.
Incredible. And then he did a movie called Midsommar.
That's right.
And they both are sort of thriller, horror, with comedy interspliced, kind of like Sopranos. You know, he's very genre bending, and he calls this his nightmare comedy. So, you know, it's in a very intense scene. He really is an incredible director with human emotion. So we went to prepare, and then on set, you know, he was so kind and giving and a leader, but he really didn't talk. You know, he stayed in it. He set the tone for everyone, but he would come over and like give you a pat on the back. Mm-hmm. Look at you and just be like, it's going well. This is, let's not talk about it. Let's not get out of it. Stay in it. But like, yeah, that's it. And that was just so incredible. So incredible. Such a giving, an incredible person. And I'm grateful to, you know, call him a friend and stay in touch.
It's smart that you're working with just great actors and having great experiences and not worrying about, quote unquote, what you should be following up anything with.
No, you know what? I tell people I'll do a one-line thing if it means working with great people that I'm going to learn. My pinnacle for success is, did I learn something? If I go any more than that, you know, I'll get in my head. I'll get scared. Can I show up, be professional, give my fellow actors what they need, and can I learn something? Then it's a win.
Your dad would love hearing that.
I'm very lucky.
You're in LA now, right, for a while?
I am, yeah. I'm here through January.
Oh, great. Well, get up to Santa Barbara. Get up
here. Yeah, I absolutely will.
I mean, come on, man. We gotta. How have you not come up and seen the beach house?
I know. I got it.
We have new dogs and the whole thing.
Oh, I love it. I know. I was just telling Johnny. We like have been texting back and forth to get me up there, but I'll definitely come up.
Come on, you have to now in front of America. Agree, you're going to come up and hang.
Deal. I agree, America. I will go up in Santa Barbara and see you.
Little Gandolfini. I mean, he's just got such insane, like, love me, sweet energy. I love that kid so much. I'm so happy that he's doing great. And I thought that was awesome. I hope you guys did as well. I had an absolute blast talking to him. Makes me feel good about being an actor and being a dad, for that matter, and having my son in the business. You know, all things are good. And now it is time to check the lowdown line.
Hello, you've reached Literally in our lowdown line, where you can get the lowdown on all things about me, Rob Lowe. 323-570-4551. So have at it. Here's the beep.
Hi, Rob. My name is Becky. I'm from Louisiana. I recently saw your YouTube clip regarding stopping drinking. It's very inspiring to me. I want to begin that journey. I guess you understand how much it robs you of so much of life that can be enjoyed. And I just wanted to thank you so much for sharing that. And I watch Lone Star 911, love it. You're absolutely amazing. You're still as gorgeous as you were ever. And, I just appreciate you sharing the story. And I just wanted to tell you thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for that. That means a lot to me. And thank you for sharing your journey. I guess my thoughts on anybody out there, you know, it's the new year, everybody's made New Year's resolutions. And you know, a lot of you, I'm sure, are like, I'm going to cut down drinking or eating bad or whatever it is. But if it's drinking or anything around addiction, which so many people are dealing with, whether personally or within their family, it's a real thing. You know, like you allude to, I've been very, very blessed that I am in recovery and have been in recovery from drinking and drugs for over 30 years. And I guess the willingness you already have, then that's the key, the willingness. If you don't have the willingness, it's not going to happen. You're willing, and you should go into it feeling armed with confidence and feel really good about yourself. Because only you can help you. There isn't a support group or a psychiatrist or a medicine that's going to make one bit of difference to you without you being ready. So if you're ready, the world's your oyster. And, you know, I would urge you to seek out AA. Somebody once said that America's two greatest exports to the world were jazz and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I agree. So you can dial, you know, information. It's going to be right there in your town. I would urge you to, you know, when you go in and listen to people, listen to what you have in common with people and not look for the things that you don't have in common, because there are going to be people you don't have anything in common with. That's just the nature of life. And don't use that as a barrier. And, you know, one day at a time, you're starting from a good place. And I wish you all the success and luck in the world, because it is a great life on the other side of it. Next week, spectacular guest. Don't forget to give us that 5-star at Apple. Thank you for listening, and more to come on Literally with me, Rob Lowe.
You've been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe, produced and engineered by me, Rob Schulte. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. The podcast is executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. Our talent bookers are Gina Batista, Paula Davis, and Britt Kahn, and music is by Devin Torrey Bryant. Make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll see you next week on Literally with Rob Lowe.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.